For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave.
Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell in the cave, and fall has come. The leaves are finally starting to turn. They're falling off the tree. The weather hasn't changed. The weather's still
temperature wise, August.
But the kids are all in school, and so school is in full swing. I know you've got classes that you're teaching. I've got a couple of kind of homeschool classes that I'm teaching with my kids and some of their friends. And so as school is going on, it's kind of funny. One of the funniest things is I've noticed that students' minds are a lot sharper in the middle of the summer than they are once school starts. Something happens that the brains start to shut down when the classes start.
The more I lecture, the more glazed over they become.
Yeah. No, you're right. Not only do the brains shut down, but you start to see those eyelids shut down too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, it is a funny phenomenon that in the middle of the summer when the swimming pool's open and all the activities are going on.
Oh, yeah.
And the kids
throttle.
are going full throttle, but they're sharp. Yeah. You know, their minds are sharp. They're
paying attention.
They're paying attention. And it seems like their intellects are wasted in the summertime, and then when we hit fall, when they should be, you know, perking back up and trying to absorb everything and engaged in school, the minds start to shut down.
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, in education, Mark, I think I'm sure have experienced this as well. One of our tasks as an educator is to help clear up misunderstandings and errors and falsehoods, and help students, especially, understand that a little bit about their intellect and what the nature of our intellect is, its capacity, its potential, and how we might go about using it properly.
Right. And, you know, in homeschooling circles, a lot of homeschoolers follow a more classical model of schooling. And part of that is habituation. So it's not so much, especially when you get into high school, it's not so much just teaching facts and you know, going through the textbooks and all of that, but it's teaching kids how to use their mental muscle and helping them to develop the different aspects of their mental muscle so that they have, I guess, good intellectual disciplines.
Yeah, I think that's one of the more important, I guess, aspects when working as an educator is helping students come to realize, put in the effort, and then actually achieve and develop their intellect and achieve progress. A lot of people just think that, you know, well, I'm born with a certain level of aptitude, and that's it. That's it, sort of that it's fixed, and not realizing, no, there are all sorts of things you can do to improve your intellectual powers, whether that's your ability to reason, memorization. I think a couple of suggestions that I've put out there to students, and I've used actually when I've taught logic and critical thinking. I offer them three games to consider playing in their free time. And the three games are, first is chess. So chess is a way to help develop, you know, strategic thinking. Second is a wonderful card game called cribbage, which again helps. It begins to introduce a little bit of luck because it does use cards. But again, kind of strategy. And notice these are generally two-player games. And then finally, I introduce them to backgammon, which again, because it uses dice, has again this. I like games that can introduce some form of like providence or luck or risk to it, because life has that, right?
Right.
Everything's fully in our control, and you have to be able to account for misfortune, mishaps that aren't your own fault.
Well, I'm surprised you didn't bring up Monopoly as one of the games that you recommend, because I think Monopoly brings in the life experience of utter despair.
Right, you know? right.
half of a Monopoly game is just watching somebody else win.
yeah. Well, I think the game Risk is like that too. There's some games that I think have kind of interesting concepts, but without, you know, just going through a few rounds, you realize that there's an inevitable momentum towards one person, and then it's just simply the drudgery of playing it out until you finally give up.
Yeah, but board games and card games are kind of a lost art of training your mind. You're exactly right. I mean, they're entertaining, and their purpose is to while away the hours to a certain extent. But more importantly, they are training the brain. They're teaching you to think in a particular way, and they're teaching you, not only to strategize but to remember. I mean, one of the first games that we start playing as a kid with cards is Go Fish. And Fish is totally.
I liked Uno too. Yeah, it was a fun.
Oh my gosh, funny family lore from my family. I'm colorblind. I have trouble seeing colors, and so I was playing Uno with my girls, and I thought I was trying to catch a blue card. So I kept looking for the blue card, and I kept pulling up card after card after card. And,
didn't see one.
And eventually my girl started giggling at me because
I can't find blue.
I had pulled up five blue cards, and I just didn't realize they were blue. So Uno's a game we don't really play that much at our household anymore.
I could see that being a trouble. Well, I like bringing back the idea of you'll notice you picked up on some of the themes where I picked those games, but the other is that there's a social element to it as well. There's something about being face to face with other human beings involved in gaming, and we did a show recently on video games. And here, the other element I like is that the games that I introduce the students to are non-electronic.
Right.
They don't use electricity, and I think that one of my favorite memories growing up at my house. On Saturday afternoon, after my dad had done whatever he was going to do in the garage or in the yard, that kind of stuff, he always settled down for a liverwurst sandwich on white bread with mayonnaise and pickles, and then he'd have a can of Old Style to wash it down with, and then he would work on the crossword puzzle. And he would do that for an hour, and he was really good at them too. So we grew up in the Chicagoland area, so he would do the Chicago Tribune's crossword puzzle, and he had a wonderful vocabulary as a result of that. And crosswords, I bring that up because crossword puzzles, Sudoku, I think, is another game that can, again, these are things that can really truly sharpen the mind in the same way, make progress in the same way that lifting weights builds muscle.
Exactly. They're the habitual use of the different aspects of your intellect. So, you know, you're habitually using your reasoning skills. You're habitually recalling the words and things that you know. You're habitually using your memory. And not only remembering things from the past, but using your memory to kind of store stuff that you're seeing right now and bring it back just a few minutes later. So you're using all of those, for lack of a better word, mental muscles to a certain extent in all of these games. And, you know, this is a lost way of thinking about the intellectual world. You know, I think we've lost the way of thinking of the mind as a set of disciplines and a set of skills.
Yeah, you're right.
And a way of approaching the world. You know, you get a little bit of that when you look at certain disciplines like medicine or things where there's a specialized school, because there you're kind of being taught to think a particular way. So you get back to a little bit of the idea of the intellectual landscape being a set of skills and mental muscles. But for the most part, I don't think we think about it that way anymore.
No, I don't. I think that's kind of lost. And to help us retrieve that, let's bring someone into the cave.
Right. There's a fantastic new book out by one of our friends. We've had him on the show before, Dr. Kevin Vost, on thinking like Thomas Aquinas.
Fantastic. That's exactly what we need.
Yep, exactly. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be here in the Catholic Cave with Dr. Kevin Vost.
It's not too early to sign up for our Catholic Radio annual dinner. This year's dinner will be on Tuesday, October 2nd, at the Northside Knights of Columbus Hall near 71st and Keystone. Archbishop Charles C. Thompson will be our guest speaker. There'll be a silent auction, a live auction, some great food, and a chance to meet the staff and board members of Catholic Radio Indy. It'll be a great evening. Tickets are $65 per person or $450 for a table of eight. You can register online now at catholicradioindy.org. There's no charge for priests or vowed religious to attend. We'd love to have a table from every parish in the area. So go ahead, ask some friends, family members, or fellow parishioners. It's a great way to introduce them to Catholic Radio Indy. You can sign up right now at catholicradioindy.org or simply by calling us at 317-870-8400. That's 317-870-8400.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave, and joining us is a terrific friend of the show. He's an author. He's a speaker. He's written 17, soon to be 18 books. It's Dr. Kevin Vost. Welcome back, Dr. Vost, to the Catholic Cave.
Good morning, gentlemen, and thanks for having me back.
Well, it's super exciting to have you back to talk about some of your books, especially your latest book. I guess that's what's on the top of my mind. I have to admit, though, it was bittersweet in reading your latest book, which is called Thinking Like Aquinas. And I'll tell you why it was bittersweet. One is, I'll start with the sweet part. The sweet part is, your prose is excellent. I just really enjoyed the book. I can't, and we'll unpack some of that here on the show. And I think it just made, it makes a really significant contribution to the intellectual patrimony that we have as Catholics. But the bitter part was, it exposed how far away I am from thinking like Aquinas, how much more work I got to do. But it's just a fantastic book. So thank you for putting the time and effort to pen that for us. But Thinking Like Aquinas, what maybe tell us a little, Dr. Vost, about, you know, what was sort of the genesis of writing this particular book?
Sure. You know, and most of my books have been one way or another, you know, focused on St. Thomas Aquinas and his lessons. You know, partly because of my own life story, it was reading St. Thomas in my early 40s that brought me back to the faith after 25 years of atheism. So Thomas has always had a huge impact on me.
Amen.
So, yeah, absolutely. You know, so I've done books, you know, that feature more or less the ideas of Thomas. The most explicit was probably a book called The 1 Minute Aquinas, where I kind of summarized his Summa Theologica, just, you know, in just a fraction of the words he uses in the actual book. But this book, you know, I always had a special interest in Thomas as a theologian and also as a philosopher, because I love philosophy, and as a psychologist, because I'm trained as a psychologist. So I knew that Thomas was an expert in memory methods, teaching us how to improve our memory, and I'd written about that in the
mm-hmm.
past.
Yep.
But he's also been called, you know, the church's great, you know, reasoner, the man who brings reason in service of the faith. And I wanted to do a book that would show, you know, how we can use the advice of Thomas himself to think better, to perfect our powers, to memorize things better, to be able to think more rationally when we're you know, given worldly arguments about things. So I started to formulate this idea. Now, actually, to give you a little bit of background, I originally framed this idea calling it the power of prudential thinking, kind of like a play on the old Norman Vincent Peale classic, the power of positive thinking.
Right, but using one of the virtues, yes.
Yeah, exactly. But I was going to focus in on prudence, which is, you know, practical reasoning or right reason mm-hmm. applied to action, and then frame the book around how Thomas laid out what is prudence. He talks about like eight main parts. You have to have memory, you have to have understanding and reason, and so forth. So I kind of started the book that way, but it evolved through my working with the publisher and editor at Sophia Institute Press to, I think, a better idea and a more accessible approach. It came to be called How to Think Like Aquinas. And our focus that's used to explicate this was not the parts of prudence, though they're in there, but it's this simple little letter called the Letter of St. Thomas to Brother John on How to Study. It's just a page or two long, and this little letter, he just gives kind of common sense precepts and guidance to this brother who asks him for his advice. How do I study? How do I come to love the truth? So that little letter and the little bits of advice, the precepts in there, then became the backbone of the first part of this book.
Well, that's absolutely fascinating, and I should for our listeners include the full title of the book, which is, it's How to Think Like Aquinas, the sure way to perfect your mental powers. And boy, I tell you, doing some work in the classroom myself from time to time, I tell you, that's one of the most challenging aspects in education, I think, is working with younger people at times, is they think just because they have a thought, just because they have the powers of intellect, that it automatically always delivers the truth to them, you know, in a way that's often emotionally charged. And it's kind of like, well, actually, to help them, as you're doing here with the book, help them to understand that the intellect needs to be, like other capacities that we have, it needs to be trained and it needs to be formed in a certain kind of way if we're going to do, like you just mentioned, Dr. Vos, if we're going to love the truth.
That's right. I love that example you brought up, too, because, you know, as Thomas writes, you know, borrowing from Aristotle, so often natural virtues are a matter of the mean, you know, the just right, not too much, not too little. And I think in terms of these powers of the mind, you kind of hit it. Some of us are almost like in excess there. Well, I think this, I believe this, so that's the truth, you know.
Right.
Not having done our homework to really see if we search that truth. But sometimes we see it on the other side, too. We see it that we don't view these things as powers that can be developed. It's like, well, you know, I don't have a good memory, or oh, I'm not very smart, you know. But Thomas can also speak to us on that side. Well, these are powers that God has given us. But he's also asked us to do something to try to work them, to develop them, so we can improve our abilities to remember things. We can improve our abilities to reason through things. And Thomas gives us great advice on just how to do these things.
Yeah, that's. I often begin one of my, during the semester, one of the first things I say, a little shock and awe to make sure the students, I've got their full attention. And I'll say, you know, I'll say something along the lines of, you know what, I don't care about your opinions. I don't. I could care less about your opinions. They don't matter to me, and I, quite frankly, don't want to hear them. What I care greatly about, though, is your informed opinions. In other words, once you've looked into and done, gathered the facts, the evidence, the research, the investigation, I would love to hear your informed opinions on all the topics that we're going to be talking about. And so that's the kind of contrast that I think that I was picking up in your book, because you're right about helping us understand that our intellectual powers are akin to, in a lot of ways, our physical powers, in that you can make, through deliberate effort of working out and eating right, you can really transform your physical body in the same way, following the advice and some of the steps. And let's talk about some of those. What are some of those components that Aquinas would have us understand on how we might improve our intellectual powers, our ability to reason?
Sure, sure. I'll give just a couple maybe to start, and we'll see if we have time to go from there. But just in his very introduction to Brother John, you know, he tells them one thing. He says, you know, to seek knowledge, he said, you should choose to enter by small rivers and not go straight into the sea, for difficult things should be reached by the way of easy things. You know, so he's saying kind of like, start small. You know, like in our own academic careers, you know, we learn the names of numbers and how to count before we start doing the addition and subtraction and multiplication and then moving on to the higher things, algebra, geometry, and so on. So just kind of common sense, the idea that start with the little things. Start with what's easy to grasp, but then build from there. Go further and further. And this bit of advice, like all these really, in some ways, they're kind of like common sense, commonplace. It's like, well, yeah, oh, my grandpa used to tell me that, you know? But because they encapsulate wisdom, but then you can also really dig deep and see just how profound they truly are. So for one other specific example, the first kind of bullet-pointed precept or piece of advice, he says, be slow to speak and slow to enter the common room where people chat. Now, remember here, he's given this advice first specifically to a religious brother, you know, named John. But he's saying, be slow to speak, you know. And I call the first chapter, speak slowly and carry a big heart in mind. Kind of giving us a reminder there from Theodore Roosevelt's famous saying, you know, speak softly and carry a big stick.
Right, right.
Thomas telling us, you know, speak slowly. And what he's saying basically, you know, is, you know, there's an old saying, you know, still waters run deep. And I'm saying, we may have heard from our own parents or grandparents, hey, remember, you know, God gave you two ears and only one mouth.
Right, right, right.
Right, you know. And it's explicitly scriptural, too, you know, in James 1:9, be quick to hear, slow to speak. Proverbs says, even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise when he closes his lips. he's deemed intelligent. And then one of my favorites, Abraham Lincoln, my hometown guy here in Springfield, Illinois, you know, he was steeped in Scripture, and he once said, "It is better to remain silent and seem a fool than to speak and remove all doubt."
Right. Yeah, Mark is sitting there wagging his finger at me as you keep going on, saying, like, "Tim, this is so right for you."
That's right.
I'll tell you, Dr. Vos, though, that advice is so profound for today's day and age of the internet, of the comm boxes, you know, that temptation to jump on and speak your thought instantly.
I was doing that last night with an atheist on YouTube.
Exactly. And so that advice to kind of, you know, step back and avoid those places while you have a chance to sort of sort through and think through before hopping online. And honestly, there you're going to be inflaming this raging debate that probably in the end doesn't lead anywhere close to truth.
Yeah, exactly. That is a wonderful example, and I see it myself, you know. I try to be careful before I jump in on any topic, you know, in a social media forum, or even being careful just something as simple as clicking a like, you know, because we find so often that story, that summary maybe really isn't accurate in the first place, you know. Maybe someone's being disparaged unfairly, or the whole story isn't being told. So absolutely, you know, we do need to restrain ourselves, especially in that social media world where, you know, it can cause just harm, and it can inflame people, and it just seems, unfortunately, like so few people are really honestly seeking the truth there. They're more kind of trying to, you know, put their preconceived views out there.
Yeah, or grandstand. I find myself wanting to grandstand. Yeah.
And I think a lot of it goes back to people have kind of forgotten the purpose behind reasoning and the purpose for exploring the truth. You know, it's not for self-aggrandizement. It's not to ultimately win the argument and prove yourself right. It's to, I guess, expand.
There are two of my motives you've just disparaged.
But it's to expand human knowledge and to pursue the true and the good and the beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, unfortunately, you know, I mean, yeah, that's why Thomas could be such a wonderful lesson to us in our world. And, you know, we see this, you know, on television in our debates now. You know, so often there's people shown with two opposing views, and they both talk past each other or put words in the other's mouth or quote them out of context. We so rarely see, here's two people saying, where's the common ground? What's the truth we're seeking? You know, where do I see, maybe you got this part right, and, you know, just, and let's see if we can work our way towards agreement. It's so rare. And yet, that is Thomas's method through and through. If you read his greatest work, the Summa Theologica, you know, every single issue starts with these objections where he's giving people's conclusions that differ from his own, and he's reporting them fairly and accurately, and then weighing the pros and cons. You know, where were they partially right? Where did they go astray? I mean, I think so his method should be an inspiration to all of us to think that way, to see people with different views, not necessarily as our opponents, but as people we want to help, you know, guide to the truth and maybe have them help us find our way to the truth.
That's very sound advice, and advice I often need, because I don't know, maybe because of my Irish ancestry, I think I come from a long line of, like, bare-knuckle boxers. And so I want to
do that kind of... You definitely seem to have the gift of Blarney.
Right, oh yeah. I mean, that's a whole other book of yours too, Dr. Vos. I was saying we probably need to spend an entire show, if not series, on your book on the Irish saints because of the glorious nature of that book. But sticking with your more current one though, so you got to start with you know, kind of a first step in reasoning. What are some of the other steps that we should be taking?
Sure, and just to give you like a quick run now, we can just elaborate, you know, on one or two as time permits, but. In the second one, I call the power of pure prayer, and he talks about having a purity, a pure conscience, how that when we rein in our passions and our anger and stuff, it makes us better able to think and study. The power of prayer, asking for God to give us wisdom, which he promises us if we ask him. There's a chapter called From the Cell to the Wine Cellar on crafting a study space you can love, telling us, you know, how to kind of arrange our own study setting so we enjoy the solitude, we can focus, we cannot be distracted. I also talk a little bit about how to kind of take a study space with you. If you're waiting in the doctor's office or at an airport, you know, do you bring a book with you, something you can ponder? There's a chapter on the benefits and perils of friendliness to study, where Thomas warns John about not becoming overly friendly or standoffish, how to get the right measure there. One that we might touch on again is set your intellect free by avoiding worldly entanglements. And here we have that idea, Thomas Vicey refers to it as curiositas, or curiosity, where it's so hard for us now to focus on things that are important because we're so constantly distracted by things that are less important, you know, through the internet, through the television, through our constantly, you know, ringing cell phones, through billboards when we drive. It's almost we can hardly get away from it. But Thomas shows how it's very important to try to train ourselves to avoid that curiosity and to focus our attention.
Yeah, you know, our attention should be focused on what is truly important. And in today's day and age, with the television, the internet, as you just mentioned, Dr.
Smartphones.
What is important is that's being dictated to us by and large. I mean, it's what is important is what is being broadcast at us 24 hours in this particular news cycle. That becomes what's important. So the ability to step away from that and really honestly seek out what truly is important rather than, you know, what we're being told constantly, that's crucial for finding truth and improving your mental muscle.
Yeah, it is, and it also ties into the idea, you know, the intellectual powers, that we can take charge. Yes, it is hard to avoid that, and some of that we want, of course. There are many blessings that come from having the internet and television and so forth, but it's up to us being prudential to think, you know, what are the time limits that I'm going to set for myself, or what kind of media will or will I not dip into? So we need to take responsibility there, because so often these are very sharp two-edged swords. You know, they can do a lot of good and a lot of harm. But it is within our powers, you know, especially asking for God's grace, that we can help bring that under control, that we still really do possess the power to focus on what's important.
Yeah, and, you know, you bring up asking for God's grace in these intellectual pursuits, and particularly in conversation. I love the fact that Thomas brings out that God is not absent from intellectual pursuits. That, you know, that centering things around prayer and bringing a prayer life to bear on these conversations is also highly important.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And he comes at that from so many different angles, even like talking about friendliness. You know, he talks about how we should be friendly and affable and pleasant to everyone, but we need to be careful about those with whom we form really intimate friendships. We're going to spend a lot of time. We're going to talk about things. But he even says there how when we do form these friendships, we're going to spur each other on to more virtue. We can help each other become better lovers of the truth. So it's just really wonderful ways, you know, all these different powers God has given us, these different gifts, that, you know, his graces and even the capacity to form friendships with each other is a great gift that can lead us, you know, closer to God himself.
I'd like to bring us back, if we could, Dr. Vost, to ask you, share, what would be some practical ways that that we might create that sort of traveling study space, if you will? You mentioned, like, we all have opportunities, you know, waiting in the waiting room or doctor's office or at an airport or just other activities where there's some, you know, some downtime. What are some practical ways that we might turn some of those moments into fruitful intellectual pursuit?
Yeah, and I actually, you know, the most simple one probably is just always have a worthwhile book with us. And I even give two actual concrete examples in my own life within the last couple of years, what came from simply having a book with me. When I was with my wife and she went to see a doctor, I saw he kept kind of trying to find out what book I was reading. I saw him looking at it. So he eventually asked me. I told him this was a book on Blessed Jordan of Saxony, the successor of Dominic as the Master General of the Order of Preacher. And he smiles and says, oh, I'm a Catholic and I'm an author too. So we go on to have this, you know, fascinating conversation. A year or two later, I'm in an airport. And a waiter, not even my own waiter, comes over to my table because I have a big, thick biography sitting there. He says, how do you want to talk to you? He said, I so seldom see people reading books anymore in this airport. They're looking at the TV screens. They're looking at their phones. And he says, I think it's wonderful when people show they still have capacity, you know, to enter into these other worlds and to focus about things, to think about different things. So kind of amazing. You know, so even just the fact of having a book with you might not only help you study instead of flipping through some, you know, popular magazine, it might even help you connect with other people who love the truth.
Yeah, I've heard of pro-life apologists that are sitting on airplanes, and because of the book and because of the content of the book that they're reading, they're able to open up conversations about controversial issues, you know, life issues, abortion, those types of things, just simply because they happen to be reading a book about it.
Exactly. It is a very simple way, you know, to witness. And then, you know, some might choose to engage you, and you might really great work might come from this, depending on, on what it is you're reading. So yeah, very good there. Also in carrying your study space, I mean, I don't do it myself, but if you know you're going to places particularly noisy, and I found that can be a distraction. I try to read, but they have televisions blaring. You might even want to consider bringing earplugs or just whatever it takes, or bring your rosary. Maybe you want to spend that time, you know, for focused prayer. Bring your rosary with you. So we have so many, you know, possibilities for prayer and study that we might overlook if we don't think about them in advance.
Yeah, I love what you're saying about the rosary. I had a few years ago where I was praying my rosary in a public space, and someone noticed because I have a huge one. It's from Rugged Rosary.
Yeah, I was going to say, that is the most manly rosary I think I've ever seen, Tim. Yeah.
Yes, and Dr. Vost, when I meet you in person, I'm going to give you one.
Fantastic.
You'll love it. Yeah, these things, they weigh like 8 pounds. They're like very monastic almost.
And that sounds like a spiritual weapon to me.
Exactly. Right. And that's just what I was going to say. That's the great thing about them. They remind you that this truly is a spiritual weapon.
Yeah.
Because you could probably use it as a weapon.
I could choke you out with it if I needed to. Only out of self-defense. Right. Yeah, or maybe spiritually. But but it's just anything that brings that sort of public witness to something. I have a great fondness for books. So that advice about always having a good book with you, I think, is critical. In fact, I was reading a book about by Patrick Deneen the other day. I guess it was not the other day; it was a few months ago, called "Why Liberalism Failed." And I happened to be had that out, and I was in a very, I'll say, left leaning, you know, coffee shop. And I was in fear of being renditioned into some sort, you know, to where I would be reprogrammed for reading such a, you know, sacrilegious titled book. But it is funny to see how people react to what you might be reading. They're genuinely curious. And then that's another thing I want to go back to, because I think there was something, there's been kind of like, the Middle Ages or medieval time can often, in I think contemporary culture, often there's a lot of canards, there's a lot of caricatures. One of them, which I'd love for you to speak to, Dr. Vost, is that somehow during, you know, the medieval period, that curiosity was frowned, not only frowned upon but punished. But there's a particular way that we need to understand curiosity, and you bring that up in the book a little bit. So tell us, you know, what's a proper understanding of curiosity, and when does it go too far, or when we show too little?
Sure, and curiositas, or curiosity as a vice, you know, doesn't mean it's bad to have an inquiring mind, you know, about the important things.
Right.
Not at all. It means caring too much about things that are not important to the neglect of things that really are important. It's being focused, you know, too much on the trivial as opposed to the sublime. There's a line from Aristotle where he says, you know, it's better to know even a little bit about sublime things than a whole lot about trivial things. So that's the kind of curiosity that they were speaking out against. You know,
this is where you would point to someone who knows everything about Beyonce but nothing about the Constitution.
Exactly. So, I mean, exactly.
Like
perfect example. So this is maybe, you know, we all talk about we're the age of anxiety, the age of whatever. Yeah, maybe this is the age of curiosity and Beyonce in that regard.
Right.
You get that one.
Or the
on
Kardashians,
head.
Or yeah. No, there's all kinds of.
I was going to say there was a poll that they did where they asked people the names of the 9 Supreme Court justices. And people could barely
Abraham Lincoln's Roosevelt.
But then they followed it up with asking the name of the 9 Spice Girls, because this is when the Spice Girls were the popular.
Wow.
And probably, you know, 70% of the people they were interviewing knew the Spice Girls, but they
of
had
course.
No idea who the Supreme Court
you
was.
You bet.
Isn't that wild? That is our time. But and thankfully, people like Thomas are there to help us think about more important things. And also, I will say about that middle age thing, too, you know, they're often painted as people who were opposed to science. And I think it's how ironic, you know, Thomas's own great teacher, Albert the Great, is a patron saint of scientists. There are people like him, Roger Bacon, and others at that time who were kind of pioneering scientific methods. And even Aristotle, who they sometimes say they blindly followed Aristotle, he was a scientist, you know, without modern instruments in his own right. He was the father not only of logic, but of biology. And people like St. Albert the Great, Albert even wrote a treatise on Aristotle's errors. So it wasn't a matter of just blindly following the authorities who came before them. It was a matter of respecting what those authorities had to say, but then also investigating to see if all of it was really true or not.
Well, they also, something I encounter often when that faith versus science comes up is if I'm discussing it with someone who's disingenuous, they trot out Galileo, drag him from the grave, and they go, oh look, having done almost no research themselves into what really was going on with Galileo and the Holy Father and everything else,
right.
But it's one of the things I really appreciate about your work, Dr. Vost, more broadly speaking, across the 17 plus, soon to be 18 books that you've written, is you have done such a fantastic job of retrieving these gems from the medieval period. And whether it's your writing as it pertains to, the Order of Preachers or the Dominicans or these, obviously Aquinas runs all the way through. And of course, for us here in the Catholic cave, St. Thomas Aquinas is the gold standard as it is for many Catholics. And so I just so appreciate the work that you've been doing here. And maybe if you would, tell us a little bit about what sort of got you interested in studying the faith versus you're a trained psychologist. You have a doctorate. That to me would seem to keep most people pretty busy. what propelled you into this direction? And it's not exclusive, right? I mean, they're not mutually exclusive disciplines per se, but what got you, what lit that fire in you to really want to learn this faith and then share it with others, especially through your writings and your speaking engagements?
Sure. And, just to really make a 57-year long story just in a couple minutes here, I was raised Catholic in my late teens. I read the readings of some of the wrong atheists. I didn't know how to answer the arguments, and it pulled me from my faith for about 25 years. At the age of 43, through a series of events, I read St. Thomas Aquinas himself for the first time. And I thought, wow, these arguments, he answered them over 700 years ago, pulling from people who lived before him. It brought me back to my love of faith, realizing faith was reasonable. It brought me back to all those things, loving God, back in the church. And then I even realized those 25 years I was away, I studied things like psychology. I was really into fitness and weightlifting and all that. And then I realized the church teaches us about the beauty of the mind, and the soul and the body. All those, secular topics I was learning about really could be of use to the church, too. And they're almost without fail, whatever topic I'd studied, Thomas had actually talked about it in one way or another. So it just really drew me into trying to explain how relevant Thomas is for us in the world today. Just one little example, my area of specialty in psychology was memory. How memory is lost with dementia, how we improve memory through special methods. And I found out Thomas himself is considered the patron saint of memory improvement techniques. I mean, just amazing how relevant he is. And I found he was so relevant in so many ways that it just led my desire to spread this love of Thomas that brought me back to Christ, and to show other people who maybe lead them back to Christ or those who already love Christ to learn how to love him even more deeply through Thomas's insights.
And not only Thomas's insights, but Thomas's discipline, and I mean discipline in the sense of a systematic way of going about thinking. When somebody goes to law school, I think one of the first things they hear in law school is, we're going to teach you how to think like a lawyer. And so that ability to kind of think like Thomas, as your book is titled, taking that sort of disciplined methodological approach is crucial, and it's a fantastic gift, I think, to be able to kind of give that to lay people to people who may not have quite had a chance to sit down with the Summa and parse through all the difficult language that's there in the Summa.
Yeah, and that was my goal, and I think even one of the chapters is going to the power of understanding, where Thomas himself even explains exactly what does it mean to have a human intellect. Where does this come from? How can we know the truth? So he has a specific theory that, as a psychologist, I just love. I think he's nailed this. And when we fully understand this, the foundations of human thought, it also enables us to confront so many of the erroneous isms or ideologies and worldviews we see today. Things like, relativism and skepticism, materialism, all these different ideas. Thomas himself gives us the ammunition to argue against those. And in the second half of this book, I call Fathoming the Depths of Wisdom. That's where I kind of, the Irish comes out in me. I take off the kid gloves and try to, you know, battle some of these ideas so prominent today through the thinking and writing of St. Thomas Aquinas himself.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, too, we were kind of going through that. How sometimes this question will come up, I think. When talk about, you mentioned materialism. Sometimes, how would you explain, Dr. Vost, this sort of what this nature of human beings as being body and soul, and that our intellect, our capacity for an intellect is not merely, you know, biochemical reactions, but there's a spiritual quality to the human person. How do you help people come to terms with body, sort of this body soul, we're rational animals with, you know, an immortal soul versus a purely, you know, material being?
Yeah, and that again, that chapter 8 where I'm pulling, you know, from Thomas, where he talks about the nature of human understanding. He, in his commentary on Aristotle's writings on the soul, and also in his treatise of man within the Summa, where, you know, there's an age-old problem. When I went through psychology, there's the mind-body problem, you know?
Yes, Descartes, one of Marx's guys. No, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, he's a Hegelian.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and there, you know, we have like, today what's more prevalent is like the materialists, you know, who say, you know, everything's matter, the mind is just some kind of epiphenomena or just some free-floating thing without consequence. You know, it's all a matter of atoms, going back to Democritus, you know, back in the ancient Greeks. Also, we had Plato's idea on the other side that, you know, really, you know, mind is above all, and everything material is kind of pale imitation of some, you know, free-floating, purely spiritual realm. And Thomas builds on Aristotle, you know, and Aristotle gives a simple example, like of a wax that has a seal imprinted on it, you know, like they used to seal documents and things, you know. And he said, you know, that you don't ask whether that seal is the wax or the shape or the imprint. It's obviously both. He says, with human beings, you know, our bodies are like the wax. They're the material. And our souls are like the imprint, the thing that makes our bodies what they are. So our souls are what, you know, give us life and what shape us. You know, and it's interesting, sometimes materialists will say, well, how can a mind arise from matter? And for Thomas' perspective, it really is, no, the soul, you know, the essence of mind, part of its function is to grow us the appropriate body. You know, it's why humans develop human bodies and vegetables, vegetable bodies, and animals, animal bodies.
Yeah, that mind-body sort of dualism has always been a bit tricky, I think, for especially if you haven't really studied the faith and haven't really read philosophy, especially
yes.
Catholic philosophy coming out of, you know, obviously coming out of Aristotle, you know, pre-Catholic age, if you will, but it does seem like so much, it's one of those foundational questions, you know, of what is, you know, what does it mean to be, what are human beings, and how we answer it determines so many other things. So a I see in our contemporary culture examples of where someone's answered that wrong is that they treat their bodies as if they're a canvas for the absurd, where you have radical tattooing and piercing, yeah, and scarification, all sorts of strange, but people transforming themselves physically as if that were simply a canvas and not that they just happen to be inhabiting.
Right, right. Rather than my body being me,
right,
my body is a way that I can express the true me. And
that's
and
sometimes somewhere.
And
right.
Sometimes, you know, the body is a hindrance to me being able to express the true me.
Yeah, that's a whole nother show.
Yeah,
a very, very important and timely one.
Yep.
Well, we're just about out of time, Dr. Vost. I really want to appreciate you coming back into the Catholic Cave. Do us a favor. Tell us about some of the projects that you might have coming up, and then also how can people get their hands on your books and follow what you're up to.
Sure, sure. I'll maybe start with that last part. This last book, How to Think Like Aquinas, is from Sophia Institute Press. They're at sophiainstitute.com, and they've published about half of my titles. I've also done, you know, titles with five or six other publishers, and the next book coming out is called How to Memorize the Latin Mass.
Yes.
And that is from En Route Books and Media in St. Louis, Missouri. That's one's coming out in just a couple of days. Also, I have my own website, just drvost.com, just VST.com. I don't sell the books from that site, but I have most of them listed there. And there's also a comment box on the bottom if anyone wanted to contact me with a comment or question.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much again, Dr. Vost. Thank you for being such a good friend of the Catholic Cave, and we'll be in touch and talk to you real soon.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, and God bless.
You've been listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Some people are very good at planning parties and events. Some people love to help out but don't want to run the whole show. If you fall into either category, we could really use your help. Our annual dinner is coming up on October 2nd. With our small staff, it's a monumental task. If you can volunteer to help us either as a planner or a helper, we'd love to talk to you. Please call us at 317-870-8400 or email Patty at catholicradioindy.org, or you can leave us a note at catholicradioindy.org.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a ministry reaching out to Central Indiana and beyond. We have information available about what's happening in parishes here in the Hoosier Heartland, as well as access to the latest from Rome, plus apologetics and authentic Catholic teaching. We are your source for 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Renewing minds.
Got my eyes off my worries and onto God.
Transforming lives.
It's amazing that one word can just transform you, that word that you want to hear.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle, still here with Timothy O'Donnell, and we just finished up talking with Dr. Kevin Vost about his new book, How to Think Like Aquinas.
That what a fantastic book, and what a great guy Dr. Vost is. I'm really looking forward to his new book about memorizing the Latin Mass.
Yes, yeah.
He's got several books on memorizing just aspects of the faith or just improving your memory overall, which I'm north of 50 now, Mark, and believe me, memory is, one, becoming more and more valuable and harder to come by.
Yeah. It's definitely, not only is it a skill that you begin to lose, but it's an aptitude. You know, there's certainly there's a biological component to it as well. As people age, I think you, just like your eyesight starts to dim. I'm going through that right now.
Hearing, all sorts of infirmities. Who knows how much longer I can hang on.
But yeah, you know, Dr. Vost brought up Thomas Aquinas's advice on how to very practically start to counteract some of this, but mostly just how to cultivate those intellectual virtues.
Yeah, I think that a book like his, this most recent one, Thinking Like Aquinas, really makes a contribution, I think, very similar to Mortimer Adler's book on how to read a book.
Yes, that's another thing. And you're right. The book is very reminiscent of Adler's How to Read a Book. And that is for listeners who haven't encountered that book.
Because it sounds silly.
It sounds silly, How to Read a Book. But it is
a book about how to read a book.
But it is one of the more profound books. And I would recommend anybody just starting off college to take the time to read that book, because it not only helps you read your books for classes, but it helps you avoid reading, ironically, books that you shouldn't necessarily be spending time reading. It helps you be able to survey books, to take a book off the shelf, figure out what its content is, read through it, get the idea of it, and move on to greener pastures if it doesn't help you out.
Yeah, it's excellent. And I think in the same vein, this book by Dr. Vost is just for anyone who's listening that's interested in improving their intellectual powers, this is going to be an indispensable resource for you. And I know he mentioned you can get through Sophia Press, and Amazon carries it too. So
yeah, there's a cultural power to this book, to Dr. Vost's book too, that I think is understated, and we didn't really bring it up with Dr. Vost. But this is one of those books that as you're reading it, you realize, you know what, if everybody read this book and if everybody started to follow this advice, the culture would quickly turn. The culture would quickly be revised just by following the advice that's here in this book.
Yes, this notion that's often lost, I think, in our contemporary setting of you know, what is the very first step was speak slowly, you know,
exactly,
doing a lot more listening and a lot more seeking out the truth of things, acquiring knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. And it's from that vantage point that when we really can make a meaningful and significant contribution to this broader conversation that we're all a part of, as part of the human family. But it ought to be entered in not from a place of ignorance, but rather one of a kind of enlightenment.
Right. You know, that part of it brought to mind some advice from a Protestant theologian, Dallas Willard, on how
I love the name Willard.
Yeah.
In fact, if I get another dog, that's a top candidate name, I think. Come here, Willard.
Yeah. But, you know, this was his advice on how to take care of your soul, right? So, I mean, important.
Yeah.
And his first advice on how to take care of your soul was ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life.
Ooh.
So all
Ooh,
sense of hurry, all sense of rushing, ruthlessly eliminate hurry from and yeah, it brings back the advice from Dr. Vost's book of you know, taking time to listen, to contemplate, to think through before speaking.
I was going to ask you, Mark. He brought up this. We were talking about, you know, the study space, if you will, on the go. But do you have a study space at home? Do you have a particular place that you like to go?
I have a particular chair. You know, yeah. We've got a busy household,
So
you know, finding that space within our house is a little.
Yeah, you don't have a man cave at home.
No, and you know, usually it involves clearing off the table of the
Barbie dolls.
The clutter of books and papers and everything that's stacked up, you know, clutter wise. But no, we do have a sunroom, and I'll try to retreat to the sunroom and use that as study space.
Do you have a favorite beverage that you bring with when you do that?
You know, ironically, usually just coffee. Yeah, I usually, maybe a glass of whiskey, but...
Depending on what time of day.
Depending on what time of day.
If it's exactly. Before 8 a.m., it's whiskey. I tell you what, I just tried on my coffee, because I really do like finding... I also have a favorite, like, chair that I like to... And I've got a TV tray stand that I don't know what the weight limit is for those things, but I'm telling you, I am at or have exceeded it, because it's piled with books and papers and stuff like that. And it's like you like don't want to walk even too close, because you just know it's imminent, it's going to collapse under the weight of like 80 pounds of books that I've stacked on this poor little table. And I just started this. I love beginning my day with the breviary. That's my favorite way to start, and then I'll move into other things. I'm reading a book right now on Indian philosophy, Indian from India, like Hinduism, not Native American, and just kind of wandering in there to see where we might find some common ground. But I did just start, and I'm going to make a quick suggestion for listeners. In my coffee, I always like a little cream in my coffee, but there's I was reading up, there's a lot of benefit to honey. So I put a teaspoon of honey in my coffee, and it's absolutely marvelous. So I'm going to throw that out there as a suggestion. Go ahead, make yourself a nice cup of coffee. Maybe put a little honey in it, maybe a little cream. Grab a great book, especially Dr. Vost's new book. But there's so many great Catholic authors out there right now. And, you know, just take some time to work. Make a commitment to work on our intellect and building ourselves up. There's quite a spiritual war going on. Our intellect's one of the weapons we need to bring to the fight. And Dr. Vost's book is one way to help us do that.
Yeah, and not only bringing our minds to the fight, but also reclaiming our minds for ourselves. You know, I think it can't be overstated how much the world is trying to demand our attention. And so being able to have that ability to step back and shift our attention to higher, more holy things is crucial.
And that's going to be it for the Catholic Cave this week. Please stay tuned for further episodes. And don't forget to check us out on podcast. Take care and God bless.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy.
Replays of this program are available in podcast form at CatholicRadioIndy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to Kent at CatholicRadioIndy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
This is Catholic Radio Indy.